we're pleased now to welcome Dr. Jamison Day, joining us from Bauer College of Business, University of Keith.
But I want to motivate this by asking you guys a couple questions. When you're in the midst of reacting to an emergency event, what would entice you to fill out a form or click a button? Any thoughts?
Well, if you have to do it to do your job,
if it's going to help.
Yeah, it's part of your job. Sure.
There you go. Just put it on. If you perceived you were going to receive some value, either additional information, feedback, will capture your URL and update you on the situation.
Right. If you thought you were going to get some additional information,
WIIF.
What's in it for me? Yes, thank you very much. Okay, this is at the heart of a lot of behavior. What's in it for me? Whether that's on a very personal level, or whether that's on a very high-scale level of I care about my country and I want to make sure it keeps running, right? So let's get down to the lowest level. I did a lot during Hurricane Katrina, and a lot of what I did here comes from my experience and some of the interviews I did during that time. But one thing that I thought was really interesting is why would you take time to type your name into a computer when there's a relief client waiting right beside you suffering? That's a fundamental question, right? It impacts everything we've been talking about. We're talking about let's manage all this information. What if the information doesn't get created? So it's very important to look at the behavioral aspect of all this information management, information generation. Now, I haven't introduced myself yet because I wanted to motivate what I'm talking about, and that is behavior and technology, the intersection of behavior and technology, information flow impediments in Katrina. And really what we're talking about in this particular workshop is how do we create a flow of information? Information from where it exists naturally in the world, in the environment, to the places where we need it in order to make decisions. So what do? I'm Jamison Day. I'm an assistant professor of supply chain management, and I teach at a business school at the University of Houston, which is a wonderful thing. What is supply chain management, and how does it relate to this information flow issue? Well, supply chain management is managing the interorganizational, so virtual organization, flows of resources, money, and information. All three, to achieve the objectives of getting the right product to the right place at the right time at the right price. This also includes getting the right information to the right people at the right time. And through performing the functions of procurement, production, sales, and distribution. A bunch of business stuff, but really, when it gets down to it, if we can integrate this stuff all together to effectively manage resource, money, information, get things to the right places, right time, et cetera, by doing all of these things that we do within our organization, that's what I look at. That's my world. So come into my world. We're going to talk about information flows within this world. But disaster management, I'm a huge Calvin and Hobbes fan. I'll start classes with this. So maybe this is a lecture, Dwayne. I don't know. But so here's Calvin walking along. There's an event. He stumbles for a while, but then all of a sudden at the end, right? It's all right. It's all good. Perhaps it is more often rather than actual performance that determines success. FEMA did an awful job during Hurricane Ike if you listen to some news outlets, right? Oh, why weren't these pods set up on the time that they said they were going to get set up? Point of distribution is Houston. I had a lot of people talking to me about that. How might this impact technology and behavior? If we're more concerned about the perception of success than the performance. Very interesting to think about these issues.
How much work for a battalion commander that said perception is reality?
There you go. Okay.
No matter how good you are, the perception is that something fell short, It becomes the reality.
Right. And so whatever our perception is can determine our reality.
Was he Buddhist?
No.
Okay.
He's transportation corps.
Slightly different basis of affiliation.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Okay. All right. So here's an outline of what I'd like to study in our lecture today.
Old maps in a new world. Disasters as the new world pioneer. Why look at disasters when we're talking about this virtual organization thing? Let's talk about information flows and how we leverage them. Why do we need information flow? And then we'll talk about why information doesn't flow, specifically within a disaster management context. We'll talk about some of the current technologies and how they integrate into things, and then we'll discuss what are we missing. So, first question. How often do we attempt to navigate in one city by using a map from another?
Has anybody ever tried this?
I am the only person in the room.
I was in Houston, Texas for the first time, and on the floor next to me were two maps.
One of them was a map of Chicago, Illinois.
I hail from Indiana, and I frequented Chicago.
The other one was a map of Houston.
Without looking at the title, I unfolded the map of Chicago and tried to find where I was in Houston. This was not an easy task.
Eventually, I figured it out, and I switched maps. But what if I didn't have a map of Houston?
We had a really interesting discussion during lunch that reminded me of this question.
How often do we attempt to coordinate large groups of diverse organizations by giving one person, one EOC, one new EOC, the responsibility and accountability for managing collective performance?
I would submit to you, these are the same questions.
We are using an old map to navigate a new territory. And we're going to talk about that.
So, what is our new environment?
Our new environment is increasing complexity. What did we do in the past when things weren't so complex? Hierarchies, right? Rome showed us the way. And we know how to manage in hierarchies.
We put one person in charge. We tell them, all of these resources and all these people under you, you're in charge of them. Make sure they perform well. We go about doing things to make sure that they do.
Problem comes in when the world starts moving a little too fast and gets too uncertain. We don't necessarily know what to do. We don't have maybe the timely flows of information in terms of reporting and then delegatory authority, or maybe lead times with throwing resources out to things, and by the time they get there, the whole environment has changed. Right?
All of these issues lead us to move to a more nimble organizational structure. And that's where in the 80s and 90s we had this emergence of hybrid structure, right? Anybody see Office Space?
I got nine bosses, Bob. Nine? Nine, Bob. Right?
The only reason I won't screw up is because I don't want to hear about it nine times. Right?
That's the matrix structure. The matrix organizational form structure. And we have multiple bosses that we report to that are in charge of coordinating different subunits, overlapping subunits of the organization. There may be a functional division versus a product or market division. But, you know, part of that functional division has certain objectives, and those products have certain objectives that they have to meet.
And the managers might bash heads, even though they're both telling you what to do. It's a fun environment to work in. Where are we going? It is probably no surprise to all of you that are familiar with Web 2.0 and all of these social networks and
virtual organization communities, that we're moving to dynamic networks.
These dynamic networks are different. They're different for several reasons. But let's talk about
the new world and why disaster management is a pioneer in that new world.
First of all, the shape of things to come. It may not be circular, I've just drawn it that way. But you will see that there is increased uncertainty. We don't necessarily know
what's going on now, currently. I would like to get to the point where we know what's going on now, but there is no way that we will ever fully know what's going to happen
a little bit from now into the future. So
we're going to see a faster pace of change. We're going to have evolving topologies. You see the relationships here change over time.
Maybe they stopped changing already. And we'll also see evolving behaviors.
Behaviors will change over time as well. As things have become more uncertain, we see organizational entities and individuals becoming more specialized and therefore more interdependent because they still have the same survival criteria. We have to rely on other organizations to do some things for us. We have to rely on other people to do some things for us, like I have never grown my own food. I rely on others to do that. This is in society over time. We have grown toward more specialization and interdependency, and now we're doing it without authority, which is an interesting change. We also see diverse subcommunities where there are multi-scale subunits. We'll talk more about that. And they overlap. Communities that overlap and have multiple scales. Disaster response efforts embody this context extremely well. They're at the extreme of pretty much all of these. The furthest most extreme that I've found, maybe military is another one. Perhaps if we can foster effective and efficient coordination in the disaster management context, we can provide a map for achieving this in a lot of other contexts as well.
Economic transactions,
government governance,
all kinds of different domains.
So what are these multi-scale overlapping communities? Basically, you know, let's say that this is a bunch of entities within the United States. We have a government, and the government has a bunch of these entities that work for it or are paid by it at some point. Even within the government, maybe we have agencies, and those agencies might share some leaders on some boards or some, you know, joint task force or whatever. You've also got, you know, different communities that exist outside the government. Red Cross, for example, that's maybe not the best example. A Christian Emergency Network, a bunch of churches that lie outside of the government.
Then you've got things that span. So let's say maybe the American Red Cross, right? It's got some churches that are part of this CEN, but it's also got some schools that are part of the government structure, and it expands even outside of the government. And then maybe you've even got some international stuff, right? That comes in and spans all kinds of different boundaries.
So what's the issue here? What's wrong with this?
Well, the capabilities are different. The capacities are different. The responsibilities, you've got different objectives, different priorities,
different metrics that require different subsystem problem framings, information requirements to be able to calculate your metrics and aggregate and do decision support, modeling, simulation, all kinds of stuff.
Here's the key thing I want you to take away. In a complex, diverse environment, there is no one standard. There are different objectives throughout,
and there will be different requirements throughout. We need to promote interoperable standards.
Right.
We want to promote interoperable information management, and we do that with standards. No, it's deeper than that. It's another step deeper than that. Or at least, I've only been able to see one step deeper than that. So supply chain networks, all of that overlapping affiliation with different organizational communities actually exists within a context where we have flows. We have flows of resources, we have flows of information, we have flows of money. At least in my world, those are the flows. We might also have the flows of political capital or, you know, different power struggles or what have you. I focus on these three because I don't like the political world. But
keep it simple. By the way, this is not simple.
So resource flows and information flows
are what we're going to primarily focus on here, and each of these entities in a disaster relief, they're very diverse. We have a lot of different
entity types in disaster relief. They're not just individuals, for-profit, non-profit, and government agencies, maybe
various agencies. They also have different behaviors based on how they participate in the disaster, right? Some of those for-profit businesses might be a source of demand.
They might be a source of supply or relief. Or they might be not typically a control entity, thankfully. This is the only one where you don't find a lot of organizations, and want for-profit entities being in control of the disaster relief effort. If it's economically beneficial for them to participate in it, then it's probably economically beneficial for them to prolong it. And we don't really want that at a whole system level. So, diverse behaviors come from these diverse organizations all interacting together. All right. So we've got the context. And now I want to talk more about how these information flows actually help things. Why are we looking at all of these information technology solutions to virtual organization coordination? Well, it turns out that supply chain management has something to say on this theoretically. First of all, information exists out there and we can collect it. One assumption, I think a pretty safe one, right? I see that we have black tape holding down this particular power cord. I've just collected information. Information can be processed and applied by entities to improve coordination of their resource transactions. As I'm moving over this, I'm not going to drag my feet. Okay? I didn't trip. That's a great thing, right? I just processed information. Information can be shared between entities. Susan, when you get up and walk this way, watch out for that cord. Okay?
But if I do trip, I can say,
yeah, that's right. Manage the perception. So it is these three information flow activities that provide the organization the information they need to do their modeling, simulation, decision support systems to help them make decisions about what? About coordinating their flow of resources, both from their suppliers and to their customers in a supply chain sense. Improving information flows can lead to improved resource flows. This one's a bigger stretch. Right? And I theoretically prove that.
Well,
there's been a lot of collaborating evidence, right? But
we can get into the logical fallacies of relying on that. At any rate, it's an assumption.
Take it for granted for the rest of this presentation.
I think it's a pretty safe one. It tends to be what we do.
What's that? All you got to do is go to Walmart.
All you got to do is go to Walmart. That's right. I mean, they manage their information extremely well, and their resource flow is one of the best in the nation.
And their resource flows go straight back to their suppliers who are required to deliver the products, package for Walmart, mm-hmm. by Walmart, to their distribution centers, and the supplier owns the resources until it goes to the store.
There are all kinds of ways to utilize both the information flows and the coordinated resource flows together.
Walmart's done a good job.
Very much so. So, if we can improve our information flows, which is really what we're talking about doing here, that will lead
to improved resources. Did I say information? If we improve our information flows, right, that will theoretically lead to improved resource flows. Can lead to that. Not will. Can lead to that.
So, some recent research. This is something that the data that I collected during Katrina. Did an extreme case study of multiple relief organizations that were participating. We examined information flow activities and their impact on the resource flow. We looked at collection, processing, and sharing, and we identified impediments to the flow of information. Impediments to the flow of information. First, before we get to the impediments, let's talk about what collection, processing, and sharing looks like. American Red Cross Senior Director of Emergency Services, collection activities during disaster assessment. When we actually go in and record what houses are destroyed and what is damaged after disaster, there's a form to fill out. On this form, you record if the house is destroyed, major, minor, or destroyed, and what kind of damage there was. They call it a street sheet. One sheet per street. Now, information process. You bring all those sheets back, and they have to be consolidated into a larger sheet. We aggregate the data together. So that we know what kind of disaster it is. We make decisions based on that. How many shelters are we going to open up? Where are we going to open up their shelters? In accordance to, where are the houses destroyed? A big decision for the American Red Cross and their housing efforts. Information sharing activity. Well, you take that information and then you go into this phone call, right? Whenever there's a disaster anywhere in the state emergency management office will initiate conference calls, two a day, usually at 10 and 3. You have local decision makers, mayors, judges, etc. It's all about sharing information. We, as the American Red Cross, get information from other folks
That helps inform our decision-making process, which improves the resource flow for everything in the system, hopefully. Right? And we share our information about where disaster damage has taken place in terms of housing. And that helps inform decisions about maybe social services that are offered by the local or state government. So, what does this look like? Three different layers. You've got a collection layer, a sharing layer, and a processing layer. The collection layer, which can also be synonymous with resource allocation, because that's often where a lot of the information is collected, generates all kinds of information that can be brought within the organization. Each organization collects some data. Those organizations can choose to share that data, that information. And so they can pass information or data between them. They can also get that data that they've collected from other organizations back out to the field where resource allocation takes place. They can also leverage the data in order to make all kinds of decisions, decision support systems, modeling, simulation, etc. The result of that is information that can then again be shared between different organizations, or it can be passed all the way back down to the resource allocation and data collection layer. I'm going to come back to this in terms of kind of a theoretical lens by which we can look at what do our current information systems, standards, and protocols actually enable us to do in this picture. Why doesn't information flow? So this is what we focused on in this particular research effort, was why information didn't flow between the different organizations. And by between the organizations, I mean, why didn't it get collected? Right? Why didn't it get processed? Why didn't it get shared? And what we found were eight information flow impediments, which are very interesting. We're going to have to overcome these in some way. Inaccessibility. We can't even obtain data or information that is known or assumed to exist. For example, during Hurricane Katrina, the example I used for this one, somebody said, we wanted information about all of the inmates that they were sending to us on a bus, but they didn't have that information because all of their servers with that information on it were underwater. Inaccessible information. Inconsistent format. Multiple sources of similar data or information that cannot be compared or aggregated because they have different content configurations. Got a good example of that. In the midst of Katrina relief efforts, Hurricane Rita spurred an evacuation from the Houston area, and media sources started reporting that hundreds were dying of heat exhaustion in this evacuation route. So because of those media reports, we mobilized various county and city resources to go up and down the lines of cars handing out water. According to the Red Cross, all needs were being met. The police were telling us it's hot, but nobody's dying. The medical services said they transported 40 people. How do you aggregate that information together? Can you do it with an information system? Can you do it with technology? Maybe, semantically, right? But it's not that easy. So inconsistent formats lead us to have difficulty processing information from multiple different sources. What's the next one? Shortage or overload of information. Believe it or not, having too much information inhibits the flow of information. If I have too much information, there's limitations on how much I can handle, right? So it inhibits my ability to process it, and if I can't process information, it's really tough to pass a bunch of it on. Low information priority. This is a great one. It's not what we don't want to share. It's not that we don't want to share, but finding the time. I do not have the time to share. Is it important to help others capture information or provide help? We're helping, this is what I started with, right? We're helping those that are in need instead of managing information. And there are some problems with that. Source identification. What if you don't even know where the information exists? A lot of the times, the information is out there somewhere, we just don't know where to get it. And that's a serious hindrance to trying to collect data or to trying to share information between organizations.
storage media misalignment. This was a fun one. This is when the type of media that you're using to either collect or record information is not really viable for performing the different information flow activity. If you collect registrations at the Astrodome on pieces of paper, and then you need to find missing people, you've got 27,000 pieces of paper to go through to find one missing person. And the media doesn't support the processing activity as easy as it was to collect. So that was another one that we found. Unreliability. Simply, you don't have confidence in the information you have. If you don't have confidence in information, what do you do with the information? You might throw it out. You might not rely on it. You might rely on it anyway. And then when you're wrong, it's their fault. And then finally, and this is a big one for us, unwillingness. I am just simply unwilling to share my information with you. I won't transfer it to you. That was very common. In fact, we're talking about technological solutions to being able to share information. How many of our technological solutions solve this problem? Not a one. So behavior counts, right? All right. Post Katrina data collection, these were the sources that we got information from. A little academic methodology housekeeping, right? Consequences. If you have poor information flow, you get poor resource flow. Uneven information visibility, right, leads to a poor resource flow, or sometimes increased resource management or not enough resource. This is a really interesting situation. The Red Cross person has told us we don't have time to gather information from these people we're helping, with no prompting from us at all. Also went into how difficult it was to manage all of the cots that were coming into the shelter that she was managing. Now, if you're not collecting information about how many people are in your shelter and you put out a call for cots, those cots just tend to keep coming. And what you end up doing is you take all the people that are helping provide sheltering operations, and now you put most of them, are over here trying to deal with managing inventory, right? Or if you don't have enough of something, right? We didn't order enough bottles of water. Now a bunch of them are on the phone trying to find sources of water or a bunch of different other things that you need because you didn't have a correct account. So if we don't have the information and we don't process it, we don't collect it, it leads to needing more effort to manage the resource flow, which you don't really want to do. It looks bad. Let me go back. Oh, all right, there we are. Lost the mouse. All right. So each impediment that we just discussed is impacted not only by technological factors, but also behavioral ones. Individual behaviors with decisions, actions, and inaction. Inaction is even a behavior. And then we also have organizational behaviors. And when we talk about virtual organizations, we can be talking about the behaviors of individuals within those organizations and the decisions they make, or we can be talking about the way that an organization behaves in terms of its policies, its procedures, and maybe even redesigning itself as it responds to changes in its environment. These are important issues to understand if we're talking about an organizational, inter-organizational environment versus an interpersonal environment. And those are different levels of similar problems. So here's a summary slide of all of these behavioral slash technical information flow impediments, how they impact the various information flow activities, and then how that impacts, how we found it to impact the resource flow that was seen coming out of that in disaster relief efforts. My guess, this stuff is pretty darn generalizable. As an academic, don't take anything I said outside of the context in which I found it. Okay? So, what do our technologies do? Well, how do they interact in this particular particular framing of the problem? Right? Modeling and simulation, where are we at? We're up here processing, right? We need to get all that information. We'd love to be able to get it in real time. We'd love to be able to capture that information as it's being generated in the resource allocation and collection layer.
A bunch of these guys are pretty much focused on the interorganizational pieces of sharing information,
right? Managing information requirements, sort of.
NIM, managing information requirements.
Very good. Where are we missing stuff? How do we actually get the information? How do we entice the workers in the field at the lowest operational level to generate the information about where demand exists, about where capacity for certain capabilities exists? Major issue. We haven't really addressed it yet. And I would suggest that it's a part of that is because it's such a huge behavior, there's such a huge behavioral component to that. These technologies focus on managing inconsistent formats, shortage and overload of information, source identification a little bit, and unreliability of information. However, we're not really addressing the unwillingness factor, media misalignment, low priority of information, or inaccessibility. There are some technological things that have been done to address inaccessibility. They're none of the technologies that we're talking about here in this conference. So, what are we missing?
Can we create a new map?
What kind of new map do we need? How can technology be used to encourage a bunch of different organizations to behave, behavioral component, right? How can we use technology to affect behavior so that those organizations can foster coordination both within and between various subcommunities, all the way down to the entity level, all the way down into the individual level, perhaps? And it needs to happen in a general way so that we can use it not just in disaster management, but everywhere that we have virtual organization communities that we want to be able to help order. So, is information sharing the answer? What if we get this done?
Right? The water is too cold. Great information sharing. Now it's too hot. Excellent information sharing again. Now it's too cold.
Now it's too deep. So, by solving our current problems, will we just be creating new ones? I would almost guarantee it. Almost guarantee it. Doesn't mean we shouldn't solve the current problem, but let's not be naive and say that by solving problems, it won't be utopian. All right. Well, that's it.